Lord's Day presents.
Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning and welcome to the program. Today I'm going to be reading out some articles from the July-August issue of Share International magazine on various themes. This first one is titled A Rising Voice for Equality and Justice. In May, Captain Ibrahim Traoré, President of Burkina Faso, gave a powerful speech at the United Nations, indicting global powers for their ongoing domination and abuse of Africa, and declaring an end to that system. He spoke of the false generosity of global politics, and here's a quote from him. For decades, you have sent us aid with one hand while extracting our lifeblood with the other. You build wells in our villages while your corporations drain our rivers. You donate vaccines, yet patent the cures. You speak of climate action, yet continue to fund the very forces that burn our forests and dry our lakes. He spoke of the unchanging face of colonialism, but the unchanging fact of resource exploitation. You call it development when a foreign company owns 90% of a gold mine on our land. You call it progress when your security forces guard cobalt mines but not our children's schools. That is not progress, that is piracy with legal documents. He called out manufactured wars with these words. The truth is, many of the so-called solutions to African security problems are merely business models. Endless conflict has become a market and African suffering has become a subscription-based service. Burkina Faso has decided to break that cycle. We will fight terror, but not with dependency. He points out that Africa has been made invisible in global decisions that affect them deeply. At the UN Security Council, Africa, with 54 sovereign nations, has no permanent seat. What justice is this? And he says, you call it balance, we call it betrayal. You speak of democracy, yet uphold a global structure where the powerful few veto the dreams of the many. And his final words in the speech were, I do not come to declare war, I come to declare will. So we will not kneel to fear. We will not kneel to foreign banks. We will not kneel to outdated empires masquerading as friends. Africa is not asking for a seat at your table. We are building our own table where no child eats last, where no nation is silenced because it lacks nuclear arms, where justice is not filtered through the lens of race or history, but shared as breath is shared. This is our vision and this is our vow. Let the world hear it today and always. Africa will not kneel. The speech was shocking to some, perhaps because it presented an unvarnished view of the reality Africans experience at the hands of global powers, but also because it declared an end to the often hidden exploitation that has changed form but not intent since colonial days. It should be added that he welcomes sincere humanitarian assistance, but rejects a global order that disguises exploitation as partnership. Extractivism is one word for some of the things Traoré is decrying, and it has been practiced since early empires began colonizing the known world. It can be defined as intensive exploitation of resources with limited concern for sustainability or social fairness. In modern times, it has been amplified by the insatiable demands of capitalism, facilitated by globalization and empowered by the increasing influence of national and international elites who maintain their privileges through corporate capture of government. The Institute for Advanced Studies in Paris describes one of the key drawbacks of extractivism as severe socio-environmental impacts, significant deforestation and loss of ecosystems leading to soil and water contamination, biodiversity decline and desertification. These changes disrupt critical environmental services such as pollination and soil fertility, which are essential for resilient food systems. One example is replacing native forests in Indonesia and elsewhere with massive palm plantations to satisfy the growing demand for palm oil. Another is clearing Brazil's rainforests to create pasture for cattle in response to the demand for beef. Social impacts include dispossession of land, water, and forests vital to local communities, leading to increased poverty and inequality, as Traoré indicates. Also, since criminal groups often control areas of extractive activities, we often see violence toward human rights defenders, as has been reported in previous issues of Share International magazine. Nearly anything can be extracted, from natural resources to labour, data and even cultures. One recent report described the queue of tech giants waiting to build giant data centres that use vast amounts of energy and water in South American cities already under water stress. In Caucaia, in Brazil, one of the latest data centre sites, for example, a state of emergency due to drought was declared in the city at least once in 16 of the 21 years between 2003 and 2024. In 2019, almost 10,000 people were affected by water shortages, and as reservoirs were depleted, the water became unfit for consumption. This led to crop losses and difficulty accessing basic food for the people. According to the Digital Atlas of Disasters, 5 of the 22 data centres planned for Brazil are located in cities that have experienced recurring droughts and water shortages since 2003. The situation in Chile is similar. Chile already has 22 data centres, and the government has recently announced 30 new projects. That country is expected to move from a medium to a high level of water stress by 2040, with a likelihood of less water availability. Mass tourism has become another form of extractivism. Stephen Bergen, a Guardian freelance writer reporting on Spain, describes the effect that 30 million visitors in a year, attracted by relentless marketing, have on Barcelona. He says the city is being hollowed out as residents and local businesses can't afford the soaring rents. And his quote, "For those on the receiving end, mass tourism feels more and more extractive to the point that it is a form of corporate colonialism." If we wish cities and nations to enjoy self-determination in the future, we will have to address the economic and political forces that currently prevent that outcome. And the sources for that article were Traoré's speech to the United Nations, Also the Guardian media website and also the Institute for Advanced Studies in Paris. Now for a different theme, this is a more local, it's titled Citizens' Assemblies in New Zealand. Citizens' Assemblies date back to the Ecclesia, the General Assembly of ancient Athens 2,500 years ago, and have been more recently used to help navigate tricky and divisive topics in Europe, the United States, Canada, Australia and Sweden. Also known as deliberative democracy, the assemblies involve selecting a diverse group of people and providing them with information about a local issue as well as access to experts. Deliberative democracy can be very effective. Through increasing community engagement, it in turn increases trust in political institutions and allows for a wide range of issues and perspectives to be considered. A prominent example is the 2016 Irish Citizens' Assembly, whose recommendations led to the 2018 referendum on abortion, breaking a decade-long polarised political deadlock. Factors such as age, socio-economic status, education, religious background and ethnicity are usually taken into account during the selection process, so that the group of 30 or more people is representative of the population in that area. The group discuss and deliberate until they reach a consensus and then present their recommendations. New Zealand's first Citizens' Assembly took place in 2022, when 40 Aucklanders met over 5 weekends to make a decision on how to provide enough drinking water for New Zealand's biggest city for the following 2 decades. Assembly members were selected from people who responded to 12,000 invitations issued randomly via email and post. Chris Allen, the head of strategic planning for Watercare, Auckland's water supplier, admitted he was initially sceptical. He could not see how lay people would be able to understand the intricacies of the problem over such a short period of time, a problem he had studied for over 20 years, and come up with a workable solution. After observing the process, he said, "It was amazing how quickly they changed from understanding almost nothing to discussing complicated concepts and being quite comfortable talking with each other and with the experts." Matheson Russell, an associate professor in social and political philosophy at the University of Auckland and an expert in new models of citizen-led policymaking, says that regardless of their levels of education, lay people can be pretty good at making complex decisions if given the opportunity. And he says, if we're asked to vote in a referendum or an election, we don't always have the resources we need in order to make an informed decision. We know 3 million other people are also voting, so our vote is not going to count for very much. If you're in a citizens' assembly, you know your contribution matters and you have the time and the space and the resources to do that job well. As a result of the 2002 Citizens' Assembly, Watercare has already commissioned a pilot plant to produce drinking water based on their preferred option of recycled water, wastewater. Early in 2025, a Citizens' Assembly was held in Porirua near New Zealand's capital city, Wellington, where they brainstormed how they can prepare for climate change and repair damage in their local environment. In a variation from the norm, the assembly was made up of 100 Porirua locals, considering of 2 ropu, or chambers, one of 50 mana whenua, which is the indigenous people, the Maori, who have historic and territorial rights over the land, and another with 50 representatives from the rest of the community. A range of experts and scholars presented information to the assembly on topics including climate science, indigenous knowledge, and hazard mapping. After that, there were discussions between assembly members, broken into smaller groups to allow everyone a chance to have their say. Initially, the discussions consisted of getting to understand each other and their points of view. Over the course of the assembly, the discussions became more focused, moving from ideas to forming concrete recommendations. At the conclusion, more than a dozen recommendations were provided to the council, and these included incentivising the planting of native trees, putting two seats for young people on the Porirua to the city's council, and creating a marae resilience support program. And a marae is a gathering place, a focal point. Well, I'm sure all New Zealanders listening to this will know what it is, but for the sake of anyone from out of New Zealand, the marae is a gathering place, a focal point for the local Maori community. Ngāti Toa Rangatira Chief Executive Helmut Mordlik, who helped create the Porirua Assembly, was attracted to the idea of a citizens' assembly because he felt it offered a better alternative to local and central democracy, and described a citizens' assembly as explicitly deliberative versus the adversarial nature of governments. He said that, in particular, a highlight was seeing the young people, the rangatahi, who embraced really passionately this opportunity for their voice to be heard. He went on to say, "The assembly was an outstanding success that energised our community and caught their imagination. It has enabled us to believe that we can take more control of our community than we had previously been thinking." That article was sourced from newsroom.co.nz and nzherald.co.nz. And I might actually now read a message from Maitreya. This is message number 32, given in 1978. "My dear friends, I am with you once more. My appearance among men is nigh. Soon, for yourselves, you will know that I am with you. Your brothers already know me and trust me and look to me as leader. In this fashion shall I speak for them and to the world, placing before mankind the choices. Many hear me even now, listen to my words and ponder, for I tell them what in their hearts they know. I tell them that justice is a law of God. I tell them that love is the way to the source. I show them that without love and justice, mankind will perish. My brothers love me for these truths, for they recognize them to stand behind all life. Thus shall I speak, and thus shall you know that I am among you. Make haste to follow me, to create the new time, the glorious future which shines ahead for mankind. Let me speak to you simply, my friends. Let me trace for you the plan of God for that future. Let me show you the way to manifest that God which you are and so complete that plan. Perhaps you are surprised by the fact of my early return, but men and women weep, children die, and others laugh in blind forgetfulness. My coming is not by chance, but by law and love. That law and that love have brought me here. When you see me, you will see a friend and brother, and I shall know my coming has not been in vain. May the divine light and love and power of the one most holy God be now manifest within your hearts and minds. May this manifestation lead you to see your true nature as love." That message is one of 140 that were given through Benjamin Krem at public lectures in Euston Road, London, back in the late 70s. And it is done through a process of overshadowing. So Benjamin Krem is fully aware of what is happening, and Maitreya speaks through him. I hope you enjoyed today's program. If you'd like more information, check out the website share-international.org. Thank you for listening and wishing you all a lovely week.